there's nothing wrong with not requiring students to show up to synchronous learning. That's not inequitable.
Well, you're not going to need your blue light glasses to listen to us today. We're talking blended learning, though.
And now, it's time for another edulicious episode of the Bentley Brothers Podcast, bringing you what's current and what works in education. Here are your hosts, Scott and Tim Bentley.
Bentley Brothers, Bentley, Bentley Brothers, bringing education information like no other. Bentley Brothers, yep. Bentley, Bentley Brothers, bringing education information like no other. Yep. First name Bentley, last name Brothers, bringing education information like no others. Yep. With
Tim, you mean I should take these off right now? I don't have to wear my blue light glasses, huh? Well, thanks, Scott. We are going to have a good time talking some more distance learning today. It's something that's near and dear to Scott's heart and my heart because we're right in the middle of it right now and we need help just like everybody else does. So we'll be talking that in just a few minutes. But first, Scott, what do our listeners have to look forward to by the end of today's show?
Hey, everybody out there, teachers, educators, principals, whoever, wherever you're at, as long as it's before September, mid-September here, we want you to know, do you have a Donors Choose project that needs funding? Tune in at the end of today's episode to learn how you can get your project funded through today's sponsor, Advancement Courses. Our friends over Advancement Courses are awesome. They're doing some great things, providing some incredible training. And so tune in after at the end of the show. We want to share this with you because they're doing something special for teachers and we need it right now, Tim.
We sure do. And we need our guest. I can't wait to learn from her. The pre-show discussion got me going. I was like, okay, let's just... You know, we got to wait for the show. Okay. But so here goes the show. We got with us today, Danielle Strohmeyer. She was an English teacher. She was an English subject head. This I find to be really interesting. If we had a longer show, I'd love to just talk to her about this. But she was an assistant principal at a primary and middle school. It was an international school in Shanghai. So she is somewhat fluent in Chinese. Very impressive. Danielle is currently an instructional designer for Advancement Courses, our sponsor, and we're really glad to have her on the show today. Welcome to the show, Danielle.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. So you have been doing a lot of dealing with people with Advancement Courses, through Advancement Courses, on distance learning, on blended learning. Why don't you start us off and tell us, what is it that you're seeing that is the need out there? What's going wrong? What are people stressing about? Like, maybe you can predict what Scott and I are stressing about that you could address just up front.
Well, I think that a lot of teachers obviously are very overwhelmed. They were overwhelmed in March when this happened all of a sudden. And then a lot of people didn't get a ton of guidance over the summer as to what would happen. And so now they're overwhelmed again. And the biggest thing I would say to that is to remember your fundamentals and remember that you're a qualified instructional designer already. You just have to move that into the tech space. A lot of people get overwhelmed, and it happens even to us, that well-meaning people send us all these really cool tech tools, but then you get bombarded with a zillion different resources and all you want to do is plan a lesson for the next day. So I've spent a lot of time this summer going through those and helping people kind of curate those tech tools. And so when you're planning and things, that's what I would advise you to do, is to stick to those objectives that you've already like laid out or you're laying out, and then go ahead and plan your instructional task like you would if you were going to be in the classroom. Maybe you want discussion, and then locate your tech tool to fill that need. Don't let those tech tools drive the instruction. They're just a vehicle for learning. You're still the driver in that seat with the kids.
Yeah, Danielle, I know. I was night before I was starting, and we had got some things that we needed to implement within hours and all this kind of, it was like scramble moment. And by no ill manner were they trying to do that to us. I think everybody is trying to do the best they can here. And I was lucky enough to have a big brother who had already started a week before. And he said, simplify it. And I thought to myself, in my classroom, what am I doing the first 2 weeks? I'm simplifying, I'm going through procedures, I'm going slow, I'm trying to set up and establish a routine that lasts a year that's going to lead to good quality learning experiences later on, rather than rushing. I was feeling this panic. I got to push out content. I got to get this out. And then it's like, no, take a breath. And it was like almost like, thank you for the epiphany moment, Tim. And it set me back and it in a sense of like where I was thinking. And it also set me up for success in my classroom. But I'm still working those 12, 14 hour days designing this because I feel like I'm a new teacher again. But I have to rethink about how I'm presenting every single tool to my kids. So maybe let's start with that. Like where do I start or where does a teacher start in addressing this? Is it just stepping back and going slower? Or is it, I mean, what is it?
Yeah, I think that the first thing is to not let peer pressure get to you. It's cool to have all the really fancy new tech tools in there, and it's cool to have all these different things, but it's just kind of like in the classroom, a pretty decorated classroom doesn't always equate to the best instruction happening. There's nothing wrong with it. It's a great bonus, but it doesn't equate to instruction. So really honing in on the instruction itself and focusing in, like I said, on those tasks, like you were talking about, focusing in on the learning, because that also empowers a lot of other things as well. For example, in the online learning space, there's a big principle called universal design for learning. And this is one of the concepts is kind of multiple means of action. And so the idea is that kids can express learning in different ways. And so if you focus on the instructional tasks, such as discussion, then you can allow the learning to happen in different ways, because you can allow learning to happen through oral discussion and you can find Flipgrid and things, or you can let it happen through type discussion in a discussion board. But because you've set up that learning task so well, then there's space for you to expand upon it. You started in the right place, so now you can move outwards easily.
But don't spend too much time on my Bitmoji classroom. Is that what you're doing?
You know, teaching is that weird space where some of the things we do is actually because we love it. We have a passion for creation and things. So if you're doing it to de-stress, awesome. But if you're doing it because you feel like that's going to make or break your year, then no, let it go. Let it go.
I'm doing it mainly because my Bitmoji looks much better than I do in real life.
That's a new one. I have not heard that argument yet. So that's good.
Yeah, but you know what's going to happen, Scott? The kids are going to come back in the classroom at some point. They're going to go like, oh, man.
Setting expectations too high.
So Danielle.
It's going to be my people.
Yeah. So Danielle, you struck a chord with me because I rely so heavily on pair share and social interaction in my classroom for my kids to have stickability with the instruction, whether it's directions that I'm giving them or actual content. Like I go to pair share constantly and I'm sitting here looking at my kids going, who are they going to talk to? Their dog. I don't even want other people in the room because they're a distraction. They're causing trouble, you know? And so how do I do this? Tell me what to do since I rely so much on social interaction to facilitate my learning. Now, I am starting up, I'm opening a can of worms right now because what I'm talking about is synchronous learning. I've got them on Zoom and I know how you feel about that.
Yeah. I will answer your question. Then we can move to synchronous learning if you want to. You have a little bit younger learners, so you're going to need to find a basic tool to do this. There's a lot of like poll apps where they just, because you have younger learners, so you'd want maybe a yes or a no app. And so if you want them to engage and say, oh, did you understand? You can do a yes or a no. But also because you have younger learners, they can just take a little piece of paper and draw and write and say things and just hold it up for you as well, which is really cool. If you're into the more, I would say your learners would probably do better on a paper base because that's also movement for your learners. But Go Formative is awesome because you can live see what's on all of their screens at one time. So you could actually have them typing responses and things. So that's not social interaction, but it's interaction with you. It's what we call, you know, facilitator, instructor to student in interaction. And then you can draw some of those in. But if they hold it up, they should be able to see each other's responses too, which is nice. So
I've been trying, Tim. I'll tell you, I've been trying to use breakout rooms like I would, like teacher, like me pulling some kids aside and I push kids in the breakout room. Then I go in there and I hope and pray that they're all still doing their work in the big room. But that's kind of where it is in the classroom too. I mean, not completely that way. They're not lost in cyberspace, but like, I know that leads into the synchronous asynchronous thing. And I like seeing my kids. I like hearing their voices. They come on all muted. I'm like, unmute and say hi to me, please. It's like a lonely, vast muteness. And then and listen to me. But I at least want to hear you say hi. So, okay, so how do we, what's the balance? I know there's equitability issues, but first maybe just talk about the difference. Let's go slow here. The difference between synchronous and asynchronous, in case people aren't quite yet familiar with the hottest buzz word. I wish I would have got asynchronous.com or synchronous.com. Sites, talk to me about it.
Seriously. So synchronous just means that the learning is happening simultaneously. Technically, what we take that as is live learning, so that they're in a meeting, in a session with you, just like they would be class time, which, yes, creates a lot of equitability issues. It's not unrequired, not required synchronous learning is not bad, but requiring synchronous learning requires students' life, their parents' life, everyone's life, means that they have to be online at the same time as you. It also means maybe that they, what if they share a computer with siblings? What if they share a workspace with siblings or parents? What if it's not quiet in their home during that time? And then it also brings in the issues of them being like inviting you into their home, which is not the most comfortable situation for everyone. Think of all the time we've spent creating in our own Zoom backgrounds, let alone expecting children to do that. Asynchronous would be the alternative. Asynchronous is the idea that learning can happen whenever. So you would be providing readings or videos, especially for younger learners, videos and things, and that they could watch that on their own time and then complete the activities to follow up. There's nothing wrong with not requiring students to show up to synchronous learning. That's not inequitable. Offering group meetings or one-on-one meetings is perfect. That's great. It gives you time to dig in with students. But there are some issues which are unavoidable, and your districts know what's best. They've been doing research, and everybody's doing the best they can. This is uncharted territory, but I can't not acknowledge that synchronous learning does bring up equity issues.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. So how do we get away from all the tech problems that we're having? Because I feel like I'm not a teacher anymore. I'm an IT guy trying to help everybody get on this and do that, and they can't log into here. And like, do you have any tips for that? I can't even.
Yeah. Well, my first tip would be the younger the learners, the least tools, use less tools. The least tools, amount of tools you can use for younger learners, the better. If you can get an LMS, like a learning management system, that pulls those tools into it so that they don't have to log in from other sites. I say this for younger learners. We do this for adult learners too, because it's hard for them to remember so many logins. But the lesser amount of time that they can spend logging into things, the better. One of the things that I always tell people, even in not even tools, but in design, is that any energy spent accessing a tool, understanding a tool, doing anything that's not the actual learning activity is energy taken away from learning. There's a maximum amount of energy kids have. It doesn't keep going afterwards. And so you're just detracting from that energy. And so everything you can do to cut into or make less energy wasted, the better.
I totally appreciate you saying that. And it brings me back way back to the year 2019. Wait, that was like decades ago, Tim. And I remember in my classroom and thinking like, oh, there's people using these tech tools, and I felt pressured. And I like tech. I use tech a lot in my classroom. I'm not a low tech. But I like some of the things I'm just like, you know what? I can just do this with paper and pencil. Why do I need to go make a Google form or do all this other, whatever it might be, that takes me all these hours to do it when I can just do this on paper? That makes no sense to me at all. And it's not effective or as effective in any means. So to hear you say that, I feel very justified in those feelings from way back in 2019 when we used to go to school the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, and I think that that's kind of one of the reasons that people who thought that going online or using tech was so easy before are now struggling so much, was because we were just using substitution. We weren't really adapting or creating out of the learning. We were just substituting it for paper. And we're like, oh, cool, we're so tech. So tech savvy. And then we're like, oh no, we weren't at all. And so, you know, we all got a nice little kick, and now we're going to do better in the future.
Yeah, for sure.
So why don't you tell us what you're designing courses, and basically we've been turned into instructional designers ourselves. I mean, we did it in the classroom, but not online instruction. Can you give our listeners any tips as you design courses for teachers? How would that transfer over to students? Do you have any ideas?
Yeah, I mean, the foundation is the same. There's two big areas that I think that we talk about a lot in online design that haven't pushed into the classroom yet. And the one I mentioned a little bit already was that universal design for learning. And that's kind of the way that you can look at online learning to start being transformative. And so universal design for learning is the concept that you're including multiple means of representation, multiple means of action and expression, and multiple means of engagement. And so representation is really powerful in the online space because you can include a lot of things that you didn't get to in the physical classroom.
So explain some of those. Like, what does that actually look like?
So yeah, the multiple means of representation is the idea that when you, for example, maybe you have ELL learners, and this isn't just true of ELL learners, but learners in the classroom who are listening to you lecture, we'll say lecture, give direct instruction. But they're struggling to not only take notes and all those different things, but also, you know, listen to you, understand exactly what you're saying. So if you're doing an online video, if you include closed captioning or a transcript, which is even better, then you're hitting multiple learners. You're hitting read think learners. You're hitting ELL learners. You're hitting students who, I mean, are adult learners like this. They like to play their content in their lectures and read it and annotate it as they go. So you have the power to hit multiple learners there with representation. You also have the ability to include a lot more charts. When you're speaking to students, you can't just draw a whole table on the board very easily. It's not super easy to do all that stuff. So you can kind of pre-design what the content looks like and then orally discuss it, but you can design it in a more beneficial way. It's a little bit easier than erasing the whiteboard or the chalkboard and things. You can also include a lot more images. You can send them to YouTube videos a lot easier and you're not having to, you know, just see if they're paying attention and things. So that's great. But like I said, with the discussion board too, when we talk about multiple means of action, on the online space, you can give kids a lot more choice in their ways to express learning. They could do Flipgrid videos to explain things, or they could do written discussion boards, which in the classroom, a lot of times we can only do written homework because you don't have time to listen to 30 individual answers in a classroom space. Also, their peers are not going to listen to 30 individual responses. So you can just have them all film very short responses and maybe you don't have to grade 30 essay questions then at the end of the day. And that multiple means of engagement, this goes back to the asynchronous idea, but you can give kids a lot more freedom, which I've read a lot of different accounts of kids who maybe struggle with focus in the classroom or other things doing really well in the online space because they're not being forced to just sit in a class for 8 hours. Instead, they can do their work, get it done and move on with their day or move on to further learning. And so it gives multiple means of engagement means considering differentiating schedules, allowing independent learning, all sorts of things like that. So yeah, there's really a lot of potential in the online space, which is really great. However, the one thing that I was mentioning pre this conversation with you boys was when I moved into the online teaching, I was specifically trained in that area of accessibility. Legally, when you put content and things online, you have to understand how to make it accessible for our learners. Our school buildings wouldn't be allowed to exist without handicap ramps or elevators or anything like that. Yet for some reason, teachers have just been thrown into this online space and no accessibility in the online space has been trained for them or given to them at all. So this is an area that we all kind of need to look to improve on, and education itself kind of needs to improve on a little bit.
Excellent.
So besides the universal design, Daniel, just really short, quickly, because I know we're running out of time here, but what's one step a teacher could take tomorrow after they listen to this to make things more accessible? I'm a big fan of Flipgrid. Padlet's a great thing for posting stuff. There's so many means within our LMS. We have discussion boards. But what's one thing to make things more accessible? Because I see there's a picture out there now of two kids sitting outside of a Taco Bell with their Chromebooks, having to do school from there. And so it's there's others really deep accessibility issues. Just those smaller accessibility issues, being able to log on to multiple things.
The biggest thing I would say, if you want to lean into accessibility, is first of all, learn to use a screen reader and teach your kids how to use a screen reader, because that will empower anybody who needs help and support in reading. That will empower them. And so that's a big thing. The other big thing I would say is make sure that you include a transcript for every video that you have. Because when you talk about those kids who don't have access to internet, they can get usually access long enough to download a transcript of something and read it again and again, even without the internet or something. It's those videos that have to stream for 45 minutes or an hour. And some kids' internet is so bad that, I mean, it might take an hour for it to load and then it cuts out in the middle. So transcripts can really help with that. Yeah. After that, yeah, I would make sure that you're just making sure that you're using materials and making them readable. Don't use pretty fancy fonts and space out the reading and stuff. Yeah. So that was all really big in accessibility.
So what fonts would you, no, I'm just kidding.
Sans, anything sans serif, Arial, Times New Roman. They're the popular ones for a reason. You didn't know this, but it was all pre-designed for you.
Thank you for that.
Well, I'm at the point where I've got a lot of kids that can't even read, so giving them transcripts isn't going to do them any good.
Yeah, well, you're the screen reader one, and that's the thing. If you like, can teach your kids to use screen readers and then make their stuff, you're
a screen reader.
A screen reader means that like if they like click on the document and you've opened this app, then it will read it to them. Like it will read the document to them. It will read the instructions to them. It will read them through each single one. And
explain that to me.
There's some really great tools. Like in Flipgrid, there's an immersive reader since they were purchased by Microsoft that actually the kids can click on this play button and it reads the instructions aloud to them. And it doesn't sound like a computerized voice. It actually sounds more authentic. So there's different immersive readers out there. There's extensions that you can find that will actually read the text aloud to the kids off of websites, off of like documents. Am I saying this right, Daniel?
Yeah, you're perfectly right. That's completely right. Yeah. There's tons of free tools.
I thought you were talking about some actual app for this because I know about what you're talking about. At Canvas, they have that button up in the right corner, top right corner, that's the immersive reader where it reads it to them. But I thought you meant that there was some tool that I could use that could go to any text on the internet and read it to the kids.
There are Google Chrome extensions that can do it. There are downloadable extensions that can do it. And they're all, not all, there are obviously paid options, but there are plenty of free options out there.
That's enough 18 hours of instruction.
That's what I would say. If my very first accessibility tip would be to teach kids how to use that, though. That's what schools should be teaching them, because that any child who's not a fluent reader or is an emerging reader, that's super beneficial for them. And I mean, we have to talk about, there's what, 12% of the population now is ELL learners or something like that. And you guys are in California, right? It's probably even higher there. I mean, that means that at home, sometimes their poor parents can't also read it fluently to them. And so that's an equity issue. It's nobody's fault, but there's tools out there that can remediate that. And when I talk about the gaps in education and teachers being trained on that, that's one of them.
And now it's that time of the show again where we play Big Bro versus Little Bro. Scott, tell our audience a little about today's game.
Well, Danielle, it's Big Bro versus Little Bro. Tim, the older brother, clearly older, right? Wink, wink. And I, the younger brother, will each share a choice with you. You'll then have to pick one of them.
And each brother will be competing for one lucky listener. Today's prize is, of course, boy, this is worth a ton of money, is one free course from Advancement Courses.
If you seriously?
Yeah.
This is amazing.
If you choose more of my ideas, then my listener will win the prize.
But if you choose more of mine, then my educator wins. Today, I'm going to be competing for Susan Smith, a teacher in Texas, in Katy, Texas.
And I'm going to be competing for Jody Judd, a second grade teacher in San Diego. So, Danielle, here we go with your first question from Big Bro versus Little Bro. Scott, you get to choose first. Which one are you going to give her?
These are kind of like would you rathers.
Okay.
Would you rather have the ability to fly at 10 miles an hour?
Or run at 100 miles an hour? Wouldn't that be awesome? I mean, if you could fly.
No, you gotta fly.
Gotta fly. That's right. Bingo.
I lived in a huge city. Flying would have changed everything.
You're only going 10 miles an hour. You're barely moving.
But cities aren't that big. They're just that much traffic.
That's much faster than an elevator too, Tim.
All right. Number two, Would you rather be in a coma for 10 years?
These are really pleasant. Or I've got one for you. You could really make an impact here, Danielle. So, would you rather be in a maximum security jail for 5 years?
Oh, for sure, maximum security. I don't want to lose 5 extra years. But also, think about the things you can learn.
You don't even know you're in a coma.
Yeah, but still, like, you don't get an extended 10 years on your life.
Oh, well, okay. All right. Number three, would you rather spend, I'm going to have to go based on your last answer. Would you rather spend a year in prison or?
A year fighting in a war.
Oh, wow. Those are both really dark. These are dark. Is there a guarantee I come home from war? That's like,
we'll give you that.
We're going to guarantee you come home and you get out of jail alive.
You get out of jail. You don't collect $200, but you do get out of jail.
I guess go to war. Maybe I could learn some useful skills.
Well, you said you could use some. Learn some.
Yeah, but like these are real world skills now. Coma, I couldn't do anything.
Very validated, Danielle, because Tim has crushed me every episode of this new season in this game. And finally,
Okay, well, we should play it out though, okay?
Play it out.
And I'm getting slaughtered, so I get to pick first again. Danielle, would you rather never be able to wash your hair for the rest of your life? Or
never be able to eat anything but delicious food. No, I'm just kidding.
Wait a minute.
Never be able to cut your fingernails.
Never wash my hair. I could go a long time without washing my hair. Cutting my fingernails, no.
I picked right on that one. Okay, good. last one. Would you rather, and now we're going to give you two jobs that you're going to do for a living. We're going to say this is going to be for the rest of your, until you retire, okay? Would you rather work cleaning toilets at rest stops or?
You'll be able to retire in mine about after a week, by the way. I just letting you know. Other one, Tim's, you got to work 20 or 30 years at. So. Or work in work for a living in a slaughterhouse.
Ooh.
You want to kill all those animals.
Yeah, I'm probably going to clean the toilets. Like, I mean, it's not fun work, but it's an honest wage. I don't think I can be the slaughter.
I might pick that too.
Scott, what's the final score of today's Big Brother versus Little Brother?
Well, Big Bro with a smaller number of choices. Danielle chose just two of your choices. But three of mine. Woo!
Good job. Good job, Scotty.
That means our big winner in Big Brother, Little Brother is not me. But you know who it is?
Who is it?
Allison Smith from Texas. Are you kidding me? She gets a free advancement course. That is amazing. That is so awesome.
That is awesome.
Although I do have bragging rights at our next family function.
Not yet. You got to win like three more times. Okay.
I want to pick the mask you wear.
That's a good one. Okay. So Danielle, can you let our listeners know how they can follow up and learn more from you? We know you work for advancement courses, but how can they get a hold of you if they want some more of these great tips? Are you on Twitter? Do you have a Facebook? You know what?
I am on Twitter. My handle is just simply Coffee Travels. Or they can reach out to advancement courses at any time if they are a teacher seeking some advice on courses, or if they're a district or administrator looking for some bigger course loads for their schools and staffs. We're always available. So any of those means work.
Excellent.
I can see this blending into some induction courses too. Like, and then just reaching out to advancement courses to like provide some great training for their new teachers online this year, because it's going to be impossible to do induction stuff the way we've done it before. And to like have to recreate, I mean, that just seems nuts to me.
Yeah, it's just going to be an interesting situation.
I think advancement courses can provide some really great stuff for the young teachers.
Yeah, I think it's great. There's also some flexibility. We're very asynchronous, which is great for all of the educators out there who are being forced, as you guys have said, to work a lot of strange hours right now. So on top of the great topics, there's some real flexibility to it, which is nice.
Thanks. Yeah, Tim, I don't know about your hours, but I basically am 6 to about 4, and then I fall asleep for 20 minutes, and then I have to cook dinner, and then I start back to work until like 11 or 12 or 1, just depending on how long it takes after dinner, and I get you know, the kid to bed. So.
Yeah, that's not how it's supposed to be. From someone who works in online learning, that's not how it's supposed to be.
I figured I was probably doing something wrong, but then I heard all the teachers around me having the same schedules. I was like, we got to do this better, you guys. We got to figure out a better way to do this.
For sure. So, Scott, let's remind our listeners quickly. We're way out of time here, but remind our listeners quickly about what's coming up this February.
February, the first Wednesday, every first Wednesday of February is Global School Play Day. We believe in play. It's needed even more. And if I can do anything to help you figure out a way to infuse play into your classroom, send me a message on Twitter. You can send it to anyone on Twitter and they'll just forward it to me. How's that, Tim? Or you can send it to my actual Twitter account, which is @ScottEach. @ScottEach on Twitter. Play. Tim, they got to go to the website, Global School Play Day, and register their class. So, and their class, they can do it from home too, right?
Absolutely. It's globalschoolplayday.com. Go check it out. We've got tons of great resources there to help you with this concept of play. You got to watch Peter Gray's talk, his TED talk. That's what really inspired us. It is amazing. All right. And so last of all, we want to thank Advancement Courses for sponsoring today's episode. Advancement Courses is a leader in online professional development with over 280 courses in 20 different subjects, including topics like online instruction, social emotional learning, and diversity, equity, and inclusion.
This back to school season, they're partnering with Donors Choose to donate 10% of all sales to help fund projects every day until September 25th. Visit advancementcourses.com/give to learn more and submit your projects for a chance to get funded. That's September 25th, 2020. But you know what? Whenever you're listening to this, visit Advancement Courses for some great sortable courses that are going to help you in what you're doing and trying to impact kids' lives.
And if you have a chance in all of this busyness that you are experiencing, I can't even believe you're listening to this show, first of all, and you made it to the end with all this work we have to do. Good for you. You deserve a round of applause for that. But if you like the show and you want other people listening to it, the best way you can do that is go on to iTunes and other platforms that you've listened to the show on. Give us a rating. It's not the listens that drives our show out to other listeners. It is the ratings. It's the reviews that people give to us. So we appreciate any of those that you decide to give. And thank you so much for listening, everybody, today, especially during these times. But thank you also,
Mom and Dad.
Mom and Dad. Thanks for listening, Mom and Dad.
I changed my name to Ron Bedley so I could be one of those Bedley brothers. Yeah. Bedley Brothers, Bedley, Bedley Brothers, bringing education information like no other. Bedley Brothers, Bedley, Bedley Brothers, bringing.